What did he decide?
Second.
We're recording now.
Oh, come on.
Hi, Mom. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're doing.
Weird.
Coming up great.
Go ahead and
load it. Messed up something on the configuration.
Yeah, let me log in.
Because it'll reset the
graphics, right.
What did we do to convince him to put Wi-Fi in his building?
He had it in already.
Yeah. That's why we have debated hotly moving here.
Sorry.
From...
He had it here already?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's there cutting my hair.
That's
one
why
day
we debated hotly moving from the library to here.
I didn't realize he had...
It was
his Wi-Fi we were picking up, not some neighbor's Wi-Fi.
Well, in addition to... Well, yeah, it was his.
But now the problem might be that the resolution is too high again, possibly.
What resolution are you running on that?
1280 by 1024.
No, it saw that when at the very beginning.
It did?
It said 1280 by 1024.
All right.
Kind of function key thing, I guess.
You could change the system settings.
So apparently it's detecting that this is plugged in.
Right.
When you boot up.
Yeah, turn the F6, which I think is just to turn the display off.
Yeah, it's not turning it back on again.
And then F5 to turn that back on and give it a chance to see it.
Those are BIOS commands, aren't they? I mean, it really has
they're,
nothing
they're
to do with
low
the OS.
Level. They don't go through the OS.
Yeah, they don't go through the OS.
All right, let's go back to F7.
Okay. No, I was actually on Control F7.
And then try to set it in the video settings for the monitor. Set it for twin view.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. I don't know if I have twin view installed, though. Let's try it again. It's not working. Okay, well, the only way to do it possibly is to disconnect this.
They're not screwed in. I just was twiddling to make it look like I was really a mechanic.
Oh, okay.
Mechanic wanna be.
All right.
You want to blow the bits out?
No, I don't have any video.
Well, if you're not... But like I said, isn't it a function? Isn't it a function?
We don't know. Let's not worry about it.
Well, we went to Control-Alt-F1 and then back to Control-Alt-F7, and somewhere in that sequence...
So it must be the sequence of going from the login to this screen, right?
It took a while, and it loses it while
it loses it and never gets it back, but then when we switched out and back in again, that's probably what it was.
By the time it had finished loading, you were there. So.
Okay, so did he reboot the router? Are we online now?
Not online. He rebooted the router.
Do you see it?
Yeah, we're connected to it up here.
It's just not taking us out.
It's just not taking us out for the internet anyway. Mm. So
how do we?
That's good.
Don't mess with it.
Don't go too high, or you get the chandelier in the picture. Yeah.
That's okay.
That's good. That's okay.
One of the things I did want to point out about some of this stuff, and this is going to possibly help people who, like us, are transitioning from a
is it working?
Yes, ma'am.
The projector is, but not the router.
The router is not.
The internet. The internet is not working.
The internet's not plugged up?
Yeah, with DSL.
Get out to the internet. It's
working.
Huh. Okay, I'll find out.
Look up his DSL or cable.
No.
Pretty much same procedure.
No, it's the internet. You've got to speak English.
The internet.
Yeah, that icon. That's an E.
Yeah, okay. Now, the thing I did want to point out about this, and we're trying to migrate our users from one system to another, from Windows to Linux, and we've got about, out of six people, we've got four people migrated, and one guy's kind of like about half and half. So one of the things they wanted, though, for the PuTTY client was...
they don't know if it's because they're switching to AT&T. They had Charter, so I don't know if that was the problem.
Okay, well, if we don't get it, it's not going to be that big of a loss. But anyway, the cool thing about PuTTY is that you can set these settings here, right? So, for example, I got Slug, right? That's slug.org. If I wanted to go to them... Right, it saves these the settings, the IP address, right? Or the DNS or the DNS address.
The login signal.
The login, the auto login name, things like that. It saves all of those in .ppk files. Yeah. I think they're .ppk files. And so they can just transport those over, copy those over from their Windows partition or whatever, and those still work the same way. So PuTTY for Windows works just great under Wine. I could prove that. Actually, I could probably log in. I could log into localhost, I think.
I got another level of insanity.
So I guess I missed the part where he said, so Wine isn't, as part, it's part of its non-emulation mode, Wine isn't pinned inside some window somewhere. That's the whole point. It's not like a, you're not emulating the entire, it's not VM. You're not running an entire copy of the Windows operating system in
right.
some
exactly.
little window.
You're
each little app is still running down on the Unix taskbar.
Exactly.
But its APIs are going through Wine.
Exactly. However, however, there's a little part of what you just said that's not entirely correct. And I'm going to show you right now. If I go to, and this is, don't ever do this.
Wait, how did you get there? Show me the app.
Don't do this at all.
The menu.
Yeah, under the Wine menu, there's a configure Wine option.
Don't do this at home.
Don't do this at home. Don't do what I'm about to do at home.
It'll only be a professional song.
It'll be very, very painful. But one of these applications, one of these things up here, yeah, here it is down here. If I click on this thing, every time you launch a window, right, it will actually, or every time you launch a Wine app, it will launch it in this little window that's the virtual desktop. And they're trying to emulate like the desktop that you get with Windows, except that it's very poorly done. And let me show you. So we'll launch a little program here. Let's see, what should we launch? We'll just launch Notepad, right? See what Notepad does. Apparently that didn't work.
Apply, did you click OK or apply?
I clicked apply. I thought that would do it. Maybe I just have to hit OK. I'll try it again. Sorry. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, this is bad. This is very, very bad. So and there's, I mean, there's nothing there except the window. And now you can minimize.
That looks like.
And it goes down here.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you can do in this thing. You can have a bunch of windows in this little window,
right.
And then you can't minimize this window at all.
That's kind of like Windows 2,
right?
Remember Windows 2?
Like okay, but they're all in this window. They're not.
Yeah.
Each of your apps is not in their own separate window.
Right. Exactly. So if I were to open up. Let's say open up the PuTTY thing.
Well, you're right.
Again.
There's no window. The problem is there's no window manager, right? Or it's
right.
It's Windows 3.1 window
it's
manager.
Extremely bad window manager, right? Like this, you know. So, you
what
know.
Do you have the emulation set to though?
Are you guys familiar with Exceed on Windows?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the same thing. Do you want your Exceed session to be single session or multi session? You know, do you want all of your Unix X clients to have their own window or all be trapped in one great big overriding window?
Okay. All right. Now, this is the famous DOS command line or maybe this is the Windows command.exe, cmd.exe.
Right.
And this doesn't come installed in the menu by default. But what you have to do is you've got to go to your oh, that was it trying to launch a PuTTY and PuTTY timed out. But so you have to go to your preferences, and then you go to main menu, and then basically this is what I did is I just kind of went and I sort of just made all this stuff sort of work. Okay, so for example, that one was under accessories, right? And what I did was is I created a new entry under here.
It's tall.
And we can edit this one, right?
Is that edit?
Still
see.
Edit properties? Yeah. Oh, no, that did a new one, sorry.
Maybe this is a Windows 3.1 interface because that's more open or more reverse engineerable.
Which one is the edit, guys? I can't see it. It's too fuzzy.
Edit?
Oh, okay.
Properties.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. So you just put the title in here, then you put the command in here. Now, in order to get this to work, the program is actually called Wine Console, and that actually lets you run any executable within that normally runs in the command line or whatever, right? Unless you run any of those. But if you just want the command shell, you have to give it the command CMD here, right, to get that to work. So if you just type wine console by itself, nothing will actually work. So that's how I had to do that.
Bring that up again.
Oh God! All right.
In the launcher event,
you don't want much, do you?
You have to put CMD.
Yeah, in the launcher event. Oh, I'm sorry, I had to go over here. So under System Preferences, Main Menu.
Oh, okay.
Navigate down to Wine, right? Then I have it under Program. I basically tried to make this look as much like the main menu in Windows, right, to be as comfortable as possible, because our users are used to seeing things there. And then under here, then I clicked on Right. When I first did it, I did New Item, right, and I had to do a new item. But just to show you, I do Properties, right?
Well, Command and Comment. I thought it said Command and Command. It says Command and Comment. All right.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's the name that shows up in the menu. And the comment is just the little thing that shows up when you hover over it, right?
So what is that wine console program?
See a little comment?
Gotcha.
Okay. What's that?
The wine right console here is the standard, and Command is the Windows program.
Right, exactly. Command is similar. What? I'm sorry. No, wait, what?
Anchovies
is at this end, yes.
But you can run any Windows command with the right argument, as long as you have Wine Console, it's going to open up in that window.
Right. That's any Windows command with the exception of batch files. Batch files have to be run within command, right? Just like they do under DOS, right? And DOS, in order to launch a program, you have to start command. Or under DOS, it was command.com.
Maybe.
Okay. So, but now one thing to keep in mind about this, this command shell is very primitive. It doesn't have any of the command switches that you would expect would work underneath of underneath a Windows XP or Windows 98 or something like that. So, or Windows 2000.
I don't expect that to work
what?
Under Windows XP, so not a problem.
I'm sorry?
I says I don't expect any of them to work under Windows XP, so not a problem.
That's basically like DOS, you're saying.
That's maybe a joke.
Right, exactly. So at this point, you can type in DIR, right, see a directory. You can execute a batch file or an .exe file or a .com file.
Does it have help?
Now,
help?
What?
Help.
Your help command.
I'm sorry, what?
H-E-L-P.
Is there a help command?
Oh, yes.
H-E-L-P.
I think there is, but I'm not sure. Yeah, there is. So you can type in help and then like some other program.
So it looks like Recovery Console.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, yeah, I'm guessing. Can I get a piece of pizza there? Because they tend to go well, exactly, which is why I want that one. Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Have you ever tried running
Cygnet
under Wine?
That's just insane. But you know what? It probably would work.
Hey, I've got the Insanity over here. On a Mac, I'm running Parallels with Ubuntu 6, and I just installed Wine on it, and it's working.
Don't tell me you're running XFCE in that Cygnet instance.
That would be weird. Anyway, I really seriously want to get out of this. But anyway, so don't run it in this little outer window here. So I wanted to make a point that this was a very limited command in terms of the capabilities that it had, right? It can run batch files, it can execute stuff, you can direct. The one thing I couldn't figure out how to do, and apparently this isn't possible, under Windows, you can go to the registry setting and tell it where command will start, what directory it will start in and stuff like that. Like, I don't know if you guys have used much Windows before, but for instance, normally it might start in like Windows System 32 or something like that, which is a real pain in the butt. And you can always change that in Windows by going to the registry setting. Well, that registry entry did not exist, and I tried to set it. I tried to create it and make it exist, but instead it just dropped me into home at H. However, the simple workaround is to type in C:, and now we're at the C drive at this point. And so you can see that we've got program files and other things inside of here, you know, that you would normally expect on your C drive.
But then you can go to the Windows and under that.
Right. What?
Where's registry in there?
Yeah, but where is the C drive? I mean, this is you're running Ubuntu.
Right.
Where is the C drive?
I was going to explain this. When this browser comes up, right, and it says where you can actually see where the real C drive is.
Oh. It's not mounting your C drive.
I'm not mounting my C drive. Now, if I had a dual boot, you know, if I had two partitions and I was dual booting and I could mount that NTFS drive using NTFS Next Gen or whatever, you know, whatever those NTFS mounters were, then obviously I could navigate to it just like I could navigate to it anywhere else, and I could also navigate to it within here, right? Now, the other thing to keep in mind is...
So what is the C drive? Is the C drive where Wine is installed? I mean, is that what is it?
Yes. Okay.
Where Wine thinks it's system disk.
Let's go up from the C drive and see what we see, right? We can see that we're in my .wine directory. And in here, I've got my registry files. So these are literally, basically, sort of the roots of the Wine system, right? And I also have my devices directory. So my devices are hard drives, and I don't know what that means.
So you can you run regedit?
Yeah. Regedit is installed. And again, I went to my main menu, and I actually did all that, right? So that is all underneath of... That's Notepad, Control Panel. There it is, regedit. So I put it under an entry called Control Panel, because I think that's where it is in Windows. I didn't have Windows to compare to it. But anyway, it launches regedit, and of course it launches it in this stupid thing. And all of these things are exactly the same as they would be, except it has fewer registry entries. But if you go to HKEY local machine, for example, and go to software, this is where I tried to fix this problem. And then I went under Microsoft, and I went to... I created command processor. I created that key, and I created this entry in there. And I put in the right command that it said to do that on the Microsoft website, but it did not work. So the command.exe that they give you is not the same as the one the Wine gives you is not the same as the real one. Okay, so you got regedit, and a lot of things actually in Wine are configured in regedit. For example, I was going to try to install that theme file that I downloaded. Now, you could literally, all that really is a registry file. And it literally just, you know, sets fonts and colors and styles and things like that for the various window GUIs. And there's a web page that's on my bookmarks list that shows how to make the Wine apps look identical to the GNOME apps. So you can't tell the difference. You can't tell that you're running this program under Wine, you know, visually anyway. You can't tell that you're running under Wine versus running it under just regular GNOME. So there's a web page that explains how to do that. And you, as I said, you can install any XP thing. Or you could, and basically what you do is you go to the little desktop editor, or you could just load a .reg file and like you normally could do, set registry edit settings. And to load a .reg file, though, you have to use the command console, right? So you got to do regedit and then pass it the .reg file. Let's see what else we can do here.
At least three or four people.
Four.
I'm not eating.
Three. So I get to have more than my quarter this time.
There you go.
I installed the one-click Ruby installer, and... it was interesting in the fact that it created an entry in here. So the reason I did that was because we've got some things where Ruby comes with some extensions that allow you to use Windows things, right? Like it can talk to the COM interface library. Basically, there's like four or five lines of Ruby code that will parse a Windows Excel file or a Windows Word document. And it'll literally pull out the text or pull out the cells out of the Excel file and do it completely within Ruby in like five lines of code. And all that exists in the bare default one-click Ruby installer. I couldn't get it to work because I needed to install a gem. And for some weird reason, the GEM thing doesn't hook up to the underlying network library under Wine. So I haven't figured that part out yet. So if I could install a GEM, and all I really have to do is just download the GEM in Linux, then copy it over here, and then install it under the Wine Ruby GEM library, then it would work probably fine. But I have to create a local GEM file to make that work. So unfortunately, I can't show you that. But the other thing is it did is it also added stuff up in my... somewhere. Yeah, here it was. It added stuff in my other. Now, I didn't do this, but it went ahead and added these directly to... now, these are Ruby programs and Ruby executables or whatever. And these are all running under Wine. What's that?
What do they do?
Well, Ruby is a programming language, and this is a programming editor and stuff like that. So this is what I do at work. So, I mean, that's the reason why I kind of did that. I'm only showing you the stuff I did, which may or may not have anything. Now, one other thing you can try to do is Wine by itself only comes with one game. Huh. Minefield. Probably the best game ever under Windows. So we can go to advanced here. And so far I haven't been very good at it. Eventually I'll hit a bomb someplace. Like, I bet you I go there.
Is it any harder than the Windows version?
No, it's exactly the same. Yeah, I hit a bomb. So you can also install soul.exe if you can find a download, and that's one of the things I was going to try to show you guys today, and that's basically Solitaire, and that runs just fine too. So interestingly enough, just to wrap all this up, we had this question come up today at work. Was there's a guy who's leaving, his last day is tomorrow, and so this greeting card went around to everybody in the office, and they all had to sign it saying best wishes, good luck, and all that stuff. Well, we looked at the back of the greeting card, and it said Hallmark. Well, that's not unusual. But then a question arose, are there any other greeting card companies? Nobody could think of any other greeting card companies, although I kind of thought of American Greetings, which some people have heard of. So, of course, we went out and Googled for greeting card companies, and we found a couple of unusual ones. There's one greeting card company called Mixed Blessings. So I want to leave you with this for Wine. I think Wine is a little bit of a mixed blessing right now.
Always it works, has been.
It works pretty well. The 1.0 version is coming out June 6th, and it might be a little bit better, might be a little bit more polished. I'd wait if you can to see what that is, but you're never going to get the full suite of applications to work under Wine, nor are you going to get them to work under Control or Crossover Office. And if you're into hardcore gaming, then you want to check out the Trans gaming site, which is also the Sedega company. And they basically customize Wine to work with a bunch of games. And most of the work under Wine has been kids trying to get their favorite Windows games to run under Linux. So almost 90% of the apps that do work are either core business apps such as Windows Office. And the other thing is that Google is paying the Wine or paying the Crossover developers to make Photoshop, the latest versions of Photoshop, run under Wine.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, so that's, they're paying them to do that, and one of the Wine committers is actually a Google employee. So there, Google has a lot of interest in Wine, and they're probably going to fund other applications as time goes on. They might release more of their programs under Wine besides Picasa. So keep abreast of that and stuff like that. Like I said, for some things it works, and your mileage may vary.
Why does Google have an interest in making Wine work?
Excel works. What?
Why does Google have an interest in making Wine work?
To reduce their cost. If they can release an application and only have to develop it for Windows, and they've got it, you know, if it works fairly well under Wine, they can release a version for Linux. That's what they did with Picasa.
So you would download the app from their site and run it on your wine, non-emulator.
With Picasa, you do not need to have wine installed. It comes with its own wine wrapper, a wine container. And when you install it, wine is there. Now, that's a very interesting thing for software developers, because one of the biggest issues with wine has been, why doesn't something work under my wine? Well, the reason why something doesn't work under your wine is because Microsoft has created many, many incompatible versions of Windows software. With Windows that's not compatible with Windows, Windows apps that are not compatible with Windows, all created by Microsoft. So Microsoft has a lot of people that keep up with all those incompatibilities. Wine is a bunch of unpaid volunteers, right, who don't have the time to keep up with all the different versions. So once somebody gets a version of Wine to work, tweaked and whatever, if they wrap the whole thing along with their application and put that into a big zip file or .tar.gz file, and then when you download it, you just dump that directory and runs and then gives you a sim link to the executable, you're running Wine, but the Wine's coming from them, not from your own system.
It's a container.
What?
It's a container.
It's like a complete container, a complete copy or clone of the Wine environment, but with specific tweaks.
But you said...
What?
In Crossover, I think they call them bottles.
Right. Crossover calls them bottles. In Wine, they call them Wine containers.
You said you need Universe and Metaverse to install Wine.
No. You need Universe and Metaverse to have Wine appear in add-remove programs.
Oh.
In Ubuntu.
In Ubuntu.
It's integrated.
Right.
Ubuntu.
Oh. You can install Wine a bunch of different ways. Okay. You can download the dev file. You can use Synaptics. You can use apt-get install Wine. Works just as well. You can download the source and compile it yourself. Probably have, and if you're running some non-Ubuntu thing, I think there's yum install Wine. Other RPM packages for Wine and stuff. It's nothing more than a traditional Windows GCC compiled application. As a matter of fact, when you install Wine this way, you get a version of GCC called Wine GCC and Wine CPP and Wine Make, which are basically Wine versions of those to allow you to compile your programs against what they call Wine Live. If you've got a Windows source code, Windows program source code, and you can compile it under GCC normally, you can compile it here to make it work under Wine. And then the biggest advantage of that is that you don't have the Wine startup time when you've got when the program loads. It basically kind of already has itself Wine embedded in it a little bit. Does all the things it needs to, so when the app loads, it already has the Wine connector, so it doesn't have to first load Wine, then load your app, and then start running your app. It starts running your app, which has Wine embedded in it.
Okay. So, the Windows source code.
Typically you don't, so in that case you would you'd use just Wine to run the XE.
I would like to add
you've written yourself. For Windows.
Yeah. Right, that's another option too.
I'd like to add that I have been very successful, especially with the older 16-bit programs.
Uh-huh.
I have not seen one yet that didn't work under Wine.
Right.
Which I have shown customers who have Vista where they don't run under Vista and shown that, I can get it to run under Linux, and they're cool. So I've done several Vista replacements with Linux instead of XP.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, the 16-bit apps that a lot of businesses still use, and they get a new computer and it's got Vista on it,
right?
They can't run their old applications.
Once they figure out...
more like Linux.
They're essentially reverse engineering these APIs, right?
But
now, are they different in every program,
Microsoft sees that
or is there just
Vista.
A you know, say 3,000 APIs and they don't know what they all are and they're just finding them one by one? Is that what's going on?
Well,
or what? Are they different in different applications?
As you saw when I had that problem with XML Notepad earlier,
right.
That was a situation where it probably was a situation where I didn't have the correct version. There's about 7 versions of MS XML 3. I probably did not have the correct version of that native DLL file, right? So that's one issue. The other issue is...
I know 10 years ago when I was still messing around with Windows 3.3 and
right.
with NT, DDL hell was...
DLLs.
Was DLL hell was just...
Exactly. And so Wine suffers from all that DLL hell.
So it's still a problem.
Right. I mean, they haven't solved it. What they have done, though, is that, and this is kind of a cool thing, because they've done all this reverse engineering, they've documented the core Windows API to such a great extent that I've heard rumors that Microsoft uses their information.
Right.
No. Like, because they come up with...
As a former Windows developer, I can attest to the fact that the Windows API documentation is spotty at best. You really flip a coin every time you look at a web page that has a Windows API. Yeah, 90% of the time it's going to work, but under certain called conditions or certain parameter types, you'll find out that that parameter got changed, it's a new type now, it got renamed, but they just never went back and updated the documentation. Because whoever updates documentation? Well, Microsoft, least of all, updates their documentation. So the Wine guys have done a really good job of documenting what's out there.
Plus the undocumented features of Microsoft.
Right. Oh,
there.
Then you have all the undocumented ones, exactly. So.
Because they can actually see what the API is receiving.
Now, have you looked at any of the Wine source code to see if there's any information in there of any value? I mean, last time I looked at any Linux source code, I found a lot of really interesting stuff. That was 5 years ago.
Yeah, I haven't had the time to do that.
Yeah.
All this came about because our CEO said, no more Microsoft. He wants the entire company off of Microsoft as soon as he can possibly get them to do that.
Ooh, is this the CEO of Ed Holland Enterprises?
No. I'm the CEO of my company. Huh. Customer Direct.
I thought you owned your own company.
No. I do consulting, but...
Okay.
Yeah. Now, so we've got about 140 employees... And 90% of them are running Windows.
Why does he want everybody
XP?
Off Windows?
Why would you want everybody to be off of Windows?
You know why my company wants everybody off Windows?
Why?
You know why my company wants to go to virtualized Windows servers?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, licensing costs.
Right, and that's number one. Number two is stability. Number three is incompatibility. Number four is upgrade. You know, 140
security.
Users, we have two IT guys. There's no time to upgrade those guys to Vista.
No, those are none of our concerns. It's all about...
We're getting to the point now where our vendors are saying, oh, what, you're not running Vista? How stupid are you? We don't support non-Vista clients, right? And we're going, wait a minute. People are moving off of Vista onto XP or back to XP, or some are waiting till Windows 7 comes out, right? And you're only doing Vista?
Did you respond and say, how stupid are you?
Well, that's what we thought, right? So we're doing that same thing. We're going to get to a system where almost all the things that we need to do will work fine under Ubuntu. The occasional thing that we need to do, we're going to use the Linux thin client thing solution and have it go to a virtualized a host that's running, you know, several copies of Windows or one or two copies
when
of Windows.
When you say your company, I mean, does your company actually do stuff or do they provide services to other companies?
We essentially provide services to other companies, but again, internally, we've got a whole bunch of workstations that are running under XP
when you,
at the moment.
When you provide stuff to other companies, they can run whatever they want. Is that it?
That's never a problem for us because anything that we provide to other companies is accessible via the web. Right. It's all just web apps, so anybody with a browser can get to our stuff.
Okay.
Right. But our internal users, I mean, this company started about 7 years ago, and they bought a bunch of cheap hardware, and they installed Windows 98 or ME or something on there. And, you know, then they upgraded to XP when it came out. Now, they're not going to upgrade to Vista, but vendors are telling them they have to upgrade to Vista, otherwise they won't support their stuff. So,
Ed, I think you ought to eat your pizza there. You keep holding it over your laptop. He's worrying the hell out of Carl. He's
watching. Carl keeps putting more and more napkins over your keyboard.
Yeah, I already put one there.
Is he worried about the laptop or is he worried about the pizza?
There you go. Pizza, there you go.
Okay. Well, did I answer your question, Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The release numbering scheme that they got now, does it make any sense?
Who?
Wine.
They just never want to make 1.0.
Yeah,
it's been in development for 15 years.
Huh.
The 15th anniversary is June 6th, and they claim 1.0 will come out on that day. Right now they're at 0.9.57.
That happens to be a coincidence. That happens to be D-Day.
June 6th? It might be. I don't
know. Well, obviously, from the standpoint of killer apps, Photoshop has been something which everyone in the Linux community has been drooling over. But and I posted this out on Discuss earlier this afternoon to encourage more people to come tonight. The Microsoft Office viewers totally mm-hmm. surprised me as being considered the other three killer apps
mm-hmm.
in that I never even really considered those applications. I mean,
I don't know of anybody that uses them.
I don't either.
Well,
yeah.
Office, Word, Excel.
Yeah, but the PowerPoint viewer and the Word viewer and the Excel viewer, it's like...
I mean, that's the one thing...
I would just run Open Office.
Right, if you have Open Office, but there are... this is a really complex topic too, but there are some things that don't look all that great in some Word documents that you'll get that don't look that good in OpenOffice. I've tried. The same thing is true for Excel. There's a couple of things where the formulas and stuff like that, or the way that it's presented, don't exactly match OpenOffice. And I don't know, can't speak from PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. But OpenOffice aside, yeah, for traditional docs and Excel files, that's great. In our case, we may not have enough disk space to install OpenOffice, but all of our 130-odd customer service representatives will obviously have to look at Word documents. And so if we install Wine and we've got the Word viewer there, they'll not have any problems. They won't be able to edit them, but they will be able to view anything that got emailed to them.
And the viewers are available with a free license or whatever.
Right, if they're completely free download. As a matter of fact, you saw that when I was running it earlier, right?
What about Windows Media Player? Is that another, quote, killer app that is a viewer? Only certain streams are available in Windows Media rather than in Real Player.
What I've heard is the killer app is iTunes. That's the killer app for Wine. And they're working on that as one of the targets for the 1.0 release as well.
Well, why don't we have an iTunes for Linux? I mean, what's wrong with Jobs?
Ask Jobs.
I mean, we're never going to have a Windows Media Player for Linux, and we know why.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We've got our WMV viewers in Linux, so that's no big deal.
Right.
Okay. We can play WMV files?
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, see, the problem is I can't expand this.
I have an M-player.
Right? What, this is really horrible.
Which one? Name me one.
Why are you using my mask? I missed that.
The player that with OpenSUSE.
Just to illustrate why you don't want to use it.
We had cross conversations.
It's Zine-based.
So I'm going to go back to Wine.
What are you saying?
What?
What are you saying? We can't hear you, Danny.
You don't need to.
For the WMVs, the viewer that's the basic viewer in OpenSUSE, I can watch them in that. I think it's...
Yeah.
I forget. It's Zine-based, though.
Caffeine?
Caffeine, yes.
Yeah.
Well, is that because you've got the codecs that are licensed from Microsoft or in SUSE or what?
No, it's open SUSE. This is not the corporate version.
Codec. Okay.
There is an M player for Linux.
Yeah, I mean the Zine M player, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
It's not Zine. I think it's just Media Player for Linux.
M player is Zine.
Maybe it is. I don't know. This way.
And VLC.
Okay, what?
BLC.
This one had little graphics in it and stuff. That's the reason why I wanted to pull this one up.
This is Microsoft Word Viewer with
right.
The desktop.
Right.
Question.
Let's look at it under Open Office, see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Where the hell's Office at? Oh, there it is.
I have a question. You've got the Wine selection under the applications menu, and I've been trying to get that, and I'm not getting it. How did that appear, or was that
what?
Getting that wine selection there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that when I did,
you go into preferences and main menu, and you put it in there.
Oh,
well, the installer, the Ubuntu installer.
The Ubuntu installer for Wine put it here initially, and then I added to it.
Oh, okay, my Ubuntu installer didn't put it.
How did you do the install?
Well, first I did it with the Synaptic, and then you said not to do it with Synaptic, so I deinstalled, and then I did it with that remove.
Oh, okay. It worked okay for me, so I don't know.
Maybe I need a fresh VM.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
If you do the install from WineHQ, it does put this in, at least in the KDE menu.
Okay, you mean the binary install?
Yeah.
Was it a deb file or what?
RPM, I believe.
Oh, okay.
OpenSUSE RPM.
Again.
No, and actually,
it's up to the package manager to do that.
Yeah.
Not Wine. They don't really do that. So whoever is responsible for maintaining that package, probably, you know, there's an option in the RPM installer to install things into menus or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing's true for deb files. All I'm saying is that the Ubuntu official package, right, does this usually. For some reason, it didn't on his, and I don't know why.
I'm on Ubuntu 6. Would that make a difference?
That's
yes.
Pretty old.
Aha.
7.04 and later, 7.1. Or 7.10.
Okay.
Everything I said tonight as far as Ubuntu integration only applies, as far as I know, to Gutsy. Okay. Oh, and that was the final thing I wanted to point out. Hardy Heron, which is coming out next month, that's 8.04 of Ubuntu.
Right.
In addition to a little bit better integration with Wine, they also have two other things which are the opposite of Wine. So the one thing is you can install Ubuntu as a Windows application. So you just run your Windows and click on Ubuntu, and it launches Ubuntu inside of a window in Windows, and you have access to everything, so it's kind of the opposite of Wine. And it's built into the core 8.04 Ubuntu package. And there's something else called, that's called WUBI, W-U-B-I. There's another thing, too, which is sort of similar to that, but you know, you've got that live CD thing? Well, the live CD can be played within Windows, so you don't have to boot into the live CD. Right, to run it and not have access to your Windows stuff, you literally just stay in Windows and it launches the live CD within a window and then does everything. And then from within there, you can then click on the installer. So you stay in Windows the whole time. You click on the installer, and then when you're installing Ubuntu, it will go, oh, hey, do you want to repartition your hard drive? And you say, yeah, and you want to put Ubuntu over here in this partition. So repartition your hard drive, theoretically, while you're still running Windows, and then installs Ubuntu, and now you can come back out and reboot and go back into it again. Or you could do what I said earlier, which is just click on the thing. Now you've got it installed as an application under Windows. You can just click on it as application under Windows, or boot into it if you want to get Grub installed and all that other stuff.
When you repartition so that you have Ubuntu on your Windows drive, would, if you run Wine on Ubuntu, would it have access to the Windows application?
Yeah. So I guess what you're asking is, If I launch Wine, can I then launch Ubuntu underneath the Wine? I guess. I don't know.
Okay, when you launch Ubuntu under Windows, as you're saying, are you going to just a memory resident version of Ubuntu or a real installation?
Are you guys okay?
You're real, let's say you have a dual boot. What would it go to your dual boot?
It doesn't dual boot. It does what Wine does, but in the Linux way. Right? So it kind of like creates a compatibility layer between the Linux kernel and Windows. If you want to read more about that, again, go to my Delicious Booksmarks and then click on the Hardy Heron link. The Hardy Heron link has a full description of all the features that's coming up in April.
And you can beta test it.
Yes, you can. You can download the beta right now and try it out for yourself.
As a matter of fact, I have loaded the wallpaper on my Mac.
Cool.
To do Hardy Heron, do you have to, can you do this and upgrade? You have done this on Gutsy.
If you have Gutsy installed, you can upgrade to Hardy Heron. If you do not have Gutsy installed, let's say you've got Feisty installed, well, then you have to upgrade to Gutsy. And then once you've upgraded to Gutsy, you can upgrade to Hardy Heron. If you have Breezy Badger installed, you've got to upgrade to EdgyEft and Feisty Fawn and then Gutsy and then Hardy Heron. If you can say your alphabet, you can figure out what you need to do.
So you have to have the immediately previous one? Is that
yeah, right. Exactly.
It's stepped.
This little guy up here.
Incremental as opposed to differential.
Right.
There you go.
And there's a command on the Ubuntu website that tells you how to do the upgrade manager. I think it's upgrade dash or upgrade underscore manager dash something or whatever, and then it actually will take you through walk you through this process. That's pretty easy to do. I've done it. That's how I got not this laptop, but the previous laptop installed or upgraded from Feisty to Gutsy. It works pretty well. We could try installing the theme if you want to do that.
Whoa, hold it. You pulled this up in order to.
We wanted to look to see what the what it looked like. This page looked like under OpenOffice.
Okay.
So I can't read that, but I think it says
Z.
Cheat sheet. Ruby
dot cheat line.
Something
Z.
Dot Ruby cheat sheet.
So it's
home edh.
Okay. Right.
Something
dot,
something
dot,
doc, doc Ruby cheat sheet. So do
right
a do a locate and look for Ruby slash cheat sheet.
Cheat sheet. Actually, there's this cool little app up here called. It's this one.
Show search item.
I think
it's
what
we had
earlier.
To the left. To the left of that window. Oh, hello. Keep going. That one, no?
That one there?
It says show search entry.
That's not it. That's a new one I put up over here the other day.
Convoy notes?
Oh, look at the properties in the file. It'll tell you where it is.
The file properties?
File properties, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The properties. Doesn't that tell you where it is?
Look at
under
general.
Left. It's supposed to, but it doesn't.
Supposed to, but it doesn't.
Interesting. Well, anyways, Ruby cheat sheet or something. I can just use the.
Why did you open it in the first place?
Well, I could read the thing, and I navigated to it.
Is it on your desktop somewhere?
It's not on my desktop. I wish it was.
Locate is your friend.
How do I get to a terminal? Where's my terminal window at? Is that my terminal window? Okay.
Terminal, there you go.
Did it open the terminal window?
Do a find.
That takes too long.
There you go.
Oh, you're looking in your, home Wine directory, right?
If you grab that pull down menu on the Microsoft Viewer,
just
right click and do a copy under a right click.
No. and all that.
What kind of crappy software is Microsoft turning out?
Oh, one thing I should point out, though, is that cut and paste between Windows apps and Linux apps works just well. If you can copy and paste, it works good.
You mean if the Microsoft app doesn't work?
Ed,
yeah.
You can go to File and copy this file to someplace where you know it's at.
Yeah, you can do that?
Yeah, just copy it.
Didn't know you can't, because this is a viewer.
This is just a viewer?
This is only a viewer, yeah. I'm sorry about that. Anyway.
All right, locate.
Yeah. Locate. And then it goes like Ruby something cheat sheet or something.
Or just cheat sheet. Cheat sheet should get
to you. Should get me there.
I thought it was hyphen sheet.
Yeah, that was supposed to be
Monday.
There we go.
This the one, Ruby, the top one?
No.
The bottom one? Okay.
You can triple click it and get the whole line.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, so we go back to OpenOffice, and we try to open up that file. The thing about OpenOffice is, like, there's no line to copy anything into. Which I've never figured out why.
Click on it. Click there.
Oh, that opens it up? Oh. There we go. Stand the rescue.
Now we know why we come to these meetings. It isn't just the beer and pizza.
Okay, this is what it looks like here. And it's not exactly the same.
Yes, it is.
Nope, not quite. Let's go back up to the top. Right? See how that line is like, the lines don't exactly match up? Check them out. The little arrows there.
Where? Do they not match up?
Right there and right there.
Right. Well, that's a size function. If you change the size.
Right, so let me go to view full screen.
Get the zoom right.
Get the zoom right?
Get the zoom the same.
That's a view function.
At the bottom.
Entire page.
Oh, entire page? Where's that? Okay, there we go. No, that shows the entire page. Do I go the other way?
How about full screen?
Full screen.
Right about
zoom. The problem is that you get this sort of border around it, and the border's not exactly right. I've had that problem before. Like, I'll create an
office. That's because what OpenOffice does is it takes some default margin settings that are not the same.
Right, exactly. So if you set those right, it probably would work.
Yeah.
Tool settings. Or edit preferences.
Yeah, but you don't know what they are. Right?
Instead of the settings that's in the document.
Right. Okay, so anyway, I've had different issues with that. I mean, they're not all this kind of issue. They're all kind of different formatting issues. Different font issue. Oh, that was one other thing I needed to point out, everybody.
You got to have the Microsoft fonts.
Go to add, remove programs, or add programs, and install the Microsoft Core fonts. And this is probably going to take a while for this to come up.
What are you looking at? Synaptic?
MSTT?
Oh,
Right there.
Install this package, right? That will make everything look a little better under Wine. Okay?
Now, that's being installed from the Ubuntu repository?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's from the Ubuntu repository.
And that's 95% of your problems of the differences between Microsoft and OpenOffice is not having these core fonts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you get the core fonts...
Yeah, even if you don't install Wine, but you want to run OpenOffice, get these. Yeah.
If you've got a dual-booted system with Microsoft operating system on another partition,
you can pull them over.
Yeah, you can use. There is a font manager that in Linux, there is in KDE, and I just went to the fonts directory in the window. I went to my mounted up my C drive,
right,
and then went to the fonts directory in Windows and select it all, hit install, and boom.
Right. Or you can just go to SourceForge. They got the Core Fonts project on SourceForge. Mm-hmm. That's where this package comes from. You can pull it from there.
So that's an important thing to have. I don't know what else. I can't remember what else. But I wanted to try installing that theme file. And pretty certain I wrote down the location of that. Oh, is it getting close?
3 minutes.
We gotta get out of
okay.
here.
Okay.
I'm gonna leave this right here, and then you guys can take care of me at the register. Do you want a box? Are you guys gonna finish
it? Yeah,
you're
gonna take it home.
I'll grab that one of the last pieces.
Go ahead. Go ahead. That's still the answer we want?
Okay.
Yeah.
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 We're sounding familiar.
Yes. Theoretically, when I shut this down, when it comes back up again, I'll be able to view my screen, right?
With that disconnected, yes.
Hopefully. Okay. So that was the secret to make this one. Now, we never tried that at the library. That might have worked. Booting it with it connected, waiting until that dropped off, and then coming back and then doing a Control-Alt-Backspace. No, that wasn't Control-Alt-Backspace. It was Control-Alt-F1, Control-Alt-F7, right.
You've got to give it time to completely boot up, though.
Yeah, so keep that in mind. I have to give a presentation next, or the second Monday in April, at the Ruby Users Group. Now that I know that, I probably will keep that in mind.
Just grab another monitor and try to connect up with another monitor.
Oh, with another monitor. Yeah, that's not bad. I can do that at work. Sure.